There was a family of McDonald's that lived in the Glencoe, Scotland area. They had been ordered to go down to Inverness, and the clan chief was supposed to give his oath to the King of England. It was King William. The Scots called him Stinkin' Billy. And so he had a deadline. It had to be by January the 1st, 1692. He started down in December to Inverness and got caught in a snowstorm. When he got to Inverness, he had been delayed, but by that time the magistrate that he had to give the oath to had left on holiday, as they called it then. And so he waited around, and it was after January the 1st when he could finally give the oath. So he went back to to Glencoe thinking all was well, but the king decided to make an example of them. And so he sent two regiments of the King's Guard in February of 1692 to teach them a lesson. And it was in early February. They went and they stayed 2 weeks with the McDonald's. They lived with them, they ate their food, they slept in their beds. And a lot of them were Campbells. They were neighbors of the McDonald's. But they were ordered on a certain morning, I believe it was February the 16th, to get up and put to the sword all between the age of 8 and 80. And while it was still dark outside, they got up and there was snowfall coming down, and they killed as many as they could. Some of the McDonald's had escaped. Some of them were found frozen to death days later. But one of the, and the clan chief himself, Alexander, he and his wife were some that were, a couple of them that were killed by the Campbell clan. One of the sons had already gone to Ireland and subsequently came to America. And so these were the people that had survived, that I'm descended from. And they settled in the Pennsylvania area and ended up in North Carolina during the American Revolution. The Battle of Guilford County Courthouse was fought on their property. This was now William Donnell. They had dropped the Mac from their name. We don't know why. And the battle was had taken its toll on the property. And so after the war was over, they decided to come down into Tennessee. They had been promised good property. They came into Wilson County only to find out that it was very rocky and not worth farming at all. They were very, very poor. And as they had crossed over the Nickajack with all their belongings on a flatboat, the Indians had set fire to everything. The only thing that we know of that survived was a Bible that belonged to Robert Donnell. He was only 14 at the time. And his father died shortly after they arrived in Wilson County. And he was left alone to toil in the fields and try to raise the money for his wife, or excuse me, his mother and his younger siblings. He wanted to be a minister, but he had no education. He was raised in the Presbyterian faith, as most of the Scots were, and he was what they called a circuit riding minister, although not ordained. So he came down into North Alabama and was the first minister to preach here in what would become known as Huntsville. And they held camp meetings. And he preached out of people's homes while the men were working in the fields. It was the women who came. They were the ones who wanted to have the formality of education and what it would bring, the civilization, to their families and to their communities. And so the time came during what they called the Great Revival of 1800, and shortly after that, that the Cumberland Presbyterians, they were called those Cumberlands, they were from the Cumberland Mountain region, who were said to be flaming fires for their exuberance, wanted to be set apart from the regular Presbyterian church. And so they split. Now, the two main differences between the religions was the Cumberlands, one, did not believe in predestination, and two, did not require a college education. And so this was his opening. He could be officially ordained. And so they would travel together two by two on horseback into this wilderness. And one would be, they would kind of spot each other and ask each other questions in order to train the younger minister. They would sleep on the ground. They walked across the rivers themselves. Their clothing was homespun. They didn't do it for money. And they were able to get a foothold in this area because so many of the wealthier, educated ministers said, "We're not going down there. Those people can't afford to pay us. We can't have a fine church. They have no money. No, we're not going in there. But the Cumberland Presbyterians did. And they, along with the Methodists, because they had circuit riding ministers as well, were the first to really establish religion in this part of the country. Robert Donnell met his future wife. She was the daughter of a very wealthy man in Tennessee at a revival. And they subsequently married. And her name was Ann Eliza Smith. And through her, he acquired a number of slaves. He was very conflicted about the whole idea of slavery. But in the state of Alabama, as the slave codes changed over time, they were not allowed to set their slaves free, or they would have to leave the state of Alabama. Now, by this time, the slaves that he owned had family members on adjoining plantations. They had their wives or their children or their mothers and fathers. And if they left, he knew that they would never see their families again. And so he turned down jobs in various places, including Memphis. He could have had a lucrative job up there at a church, but he turned it down because he didn't want the slaves to be separated from their families. He made sure that they came in twice a day for prayers. And at his plantation in Athens called Pleasant Hill, his overseer complained. He says, "We can't get any work out of these people if you've got them in prayer all the time." He says, "I'm not interested in what they do in the field. I'm interested in their souls." And he died in 1855 before the Civil War started. His son lived in the house, and his name was James Webb Smith Donnell. He was the one then who had bought the plantation in Lawrence County, known as Seclusion, for the debt that was on his wife's aunt's property, and had taken in a number of his little brothers and his wife's brothers and sisters who had been left orphaned. And he had a son who went to fight in the Civil War. And he also had a daughter who was 16 years old, whose name was Nanny. And during the sack of Athens that took place in 1862, after the Union soldiers came into Huntsville, they fanned out and they went to Decatur and to Athens. And he had been up in Corinth, Mississippi, because he had taken supplies up to his son who was fighting the Battle of Shiloh. And he got caught. Before he could get back, the Union soldiers came. There was a warrant for his arrest, and he couldn't get back home. His wife was pregnant. The Union soldiers had come into their house. Their daughter, who was 16, was dying of scarlet fever. And she went down and she asked the soldiers, the Union soldiers who were camped all around, and it was said that their house was the headquarters for Turchin. Although we don't really know that for sure, but she went and she asked the soldiers, "Could you keep the noise down? My daughter is very ill, and your singing is disturbing her." And the answer was, "Then she can go to heaven listening to Yankee music." And she died. Their daughter was born a few months later, and they gave her the same name as the one who had died, Nanny Smith Donnell. And that daughter was my great-grandmother. Now, the family lost the home shortly after the Civil War was over, and it became a boys' school, and the teachers and the students all lived in there. And eventually, it grew. They needed more space, so they added school buildings around it, and the Donnell House then became the home to the superintendent of schools. And he lived there for 25 years. His name was Julius Newman. And at the end of 25 years, he retired, and the house was in such bad shape, they were going to tear it down. It was condemned. But it was some like-minded people that got together and started a grassroots movement to save the house. And it was completely renovated, and it is now a museum. But it sits in the middle of the middle school campus.